Well, I'm Bill Lennon, and I get to be here for the next little while, as you do. And some of you, I see, have been in some of the exercises that are the presentations that I've been doing this week, and some of you haven't. And of course, this is always the Holden Village Dilemma, to make it stand alone and sort of have a theme, and how do you get to do this particular trick? One of the things that's been talked about quite a bit in two or three of the workshops, and I'm sort of staying with this theme, is this theme of intimacy and communicate. Are the papers run out? There's more. Oh, gracious.
Here. Do you need paper? Do you want a half sheet? I got paper.
Papers and pencils are just sort of... Oh, there's some more. Just need some, in a minute, we'll need something to write on. At any rate, this thing about intimacy or personal talking, or several of us have been sort of going at this from different directions, and I just want to say kind of quickly that one survey that I read said that in any couple relationship, and everybody here isn't in a couple relationship, and that certainly, you don't have to be in a couple relationship. But in any couple relationship, with a survey that was done with couples in America in about 1989-1990, that probably intimate talk or personal talk, or in the workshop I did the other day, level 4 talk, or whatever you want to say, when they did some analysis of the communication that most couples do, it was about 5 minutes a week of that kind of talk that happened. And I think that's just important to have that particular frame. It doesn't make you a good person, it doesn't make you a bad person, it's just that that's about what most folks do of communicating at personal levels that are in relationships. And I would assume then that if you're not in a living relationship with someone, but you're in a relationship with someone, a relative or someone you work with, and you would like to have some level of trust and intimacy, then one way you get at that is to be able to and be willing to do some level of this personal talk, this intimate talk, some of the things we've been talking about, and that hasn't happened very much. So it's kind of interesting. Right? It's like we want that to be, in some cases, and I'm going to talk a little bit about why we want that to be, and yet... we just don't do that. Now, part of it is I think a lot of us don't know how to do it, and some of us aren't committed to doing it. But I just want to ask just a couple of questions just to draw a little bit from the group. I'm proposing that to be intimate in conversation is risky. And I'd like you to fill in with me a little bit, if you agree with me, why that is risky. Whatever this thing called intimacy is in communication with people that are important to us, why is that risky? What are the risks at communicating intimately?
You make yourself more vulnerable. You show your weaknesses or your...
Sure, okay. Vulnerable, you show weaknesses. And why is that risky?
Well, you leave yourself open to be attacked.
Okay.
Criticized.
Okay, their responses may be such that you get hurt. You get attacked, you get criticized. Okay. Any other ideas why it's risky to be intimate or vulnerable or whatever, however words we want to put on it in our communication?
Because we don't have any control over how the other will respond to whatever.
We sure don't. I mean, not if we're really vulnerable.
That's
with
why,
it. Yeah.
You know, we like to be in control.
Yeah, and we don't have that kind of control. Mm-hmm. Boy, do I understand that one. We've been in one of the things where I can hyperverbalize to the point where you can't hurt me at all, because I'll never let you get a word in. You know, you're not going to hurt me. And of course, the opposite of that is true. I'll shut down where you can't hurt me at all. I won't let you know anything. Any other thoughts that you have about why that's risky? Those are pretty good reasons to stay away from it. Yeah.
Especially if it's someone that you're not in a long-term relationship with. There's a fear that you won't be able to get it back, that you'll have this intimate moment, and then it'll be there between you as sort of an uncomfortable thing, and you won't be able to get it back. It'll be a loss in the future.
Uh-huh. So you put it out there, and it may even be wonderful, and poof, it's gone, and it's gone.
And what was that between us?
Uh-huh. What was that? Sure. Sure. Well, those are all the things I know about. That sure covers for me. Why do it? Talk about this intimate, personal kind of whatever. Why would you say you would either like to do it yourself or have someone do that with you? What are the gains? It's risky, it's scary, it makes you vulnerable, you lose control. That's some pretty good reasons not to do that. Why do it?
It's one of the ways we get to know ourselves better.
Okay, so it's when I communicate, what does it say about me when I'm putting this out there? Sure. Okay, so it's a way we can get to know ourselves. Yeah?
You're closer to the other person. If you risk the fact of being vulnerable, if it's successful, if you just feel more close with that individual.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so if it is successful, there's a potential for a kind of a deepening of the relationship. Sure.
And understanding of the other individual also.
Uh-huh. Any more ideas as to why do that kind of thing?
Probably loneliness. Just tendency to want to be close, just out of loneliness.
Okay, sure. And the implication is, if I'm talking personally, you can come on through. Probably embarrass you, but I won't say anything. I won't say anything.
Sometimes when people get married, they get, or get together, they do it for physical reasons. And after a while, that will start to either get old or lose whatever it had. And to get into it, and discussion may be the last or the only way to keep that together.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like my parents, they always talk, you know, like they stayed together as long as they did if they hadn't.
Mm-hmm. Okay. By the way, if I know, I noticed some of you reading these pieces of paper. I pulled them out of the wastebasket. I just used them the blank side. I don't know what it even says, so. I'm just looking.
Recycle.
The paper, yeah, I pulled it out of the recycle bin. I don't even know what those papers say. Anything interesting? want to make a couple of comments about that I've just jotted up here to remind myself. Isolation versus connectedness. There's a huge difference, and I mean, obviously there's a huge difference, but there's a lot of dynamics that deal with the difference between isolated and connected. And one of the things that I want to give you an example of, which is the opposite of this open kind of talk, but it was just a very powerful example to me. I read some very detailed research that was done with some GIs that came out of the Korean War. And there's a term that they coined, that the Koreans termed in the Korean War, called brainwashing, and that term gets used loosely. Almost any time you convince somebody of something else, people kind of loosely say that's brainwashing. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But the term as it was used in the Korean War was a very specific strategy that they used. And there was one psychiatrist that interviewed all the GIs that came out of the prison camps at the end of the Korean War. And it was just phenomenal what happened about this thing of isolation versus connectedness. And I think it has a bit to do with why make some attempts to do this connecting. And so I'm coming at this in a reverse kind of way, but there are several things that we know statistically about the GIs in the Korean War. One of the things we know is that proportionally, more of them died in prison camps than any other war we've ever had. More than Vietnam, the closest next one was our Civil War. And this one was the only one that was more than our Civil War. More than the Second World War, you know, you're back to Bataan and all the death marches and everything. They died more in Korea. Okay, so that's one, I mean, proportionally, for how many people were in. Second thing we know is that, and I don't want to minimize that, particularly if there's somebody here that says, but I was there and you don't know. The treatment in the camps, in the prison camps in the Korean War, were the best that have ever been in any war we've ever been in. I don't mean they were good, but there was not as much physical torture. They fed them better. So that's another fact that we know. More died, they were taken care of better. And the third fact that was phenomenally interesting to me is that they had the lowest ratio of guards to prisoners of any war that we've ever had, which meant there were more guys up front shooting our guys because there weren't many of them taking care of the people in the prisoner of war camps. And this is what they did, a phenomenal strategy that really, and then we in the military did a whole lot of different things and had a different code of conduct and a lot of different training from Vietnam on and tried to counter this. But they did an interesting kind of isolating strategy. Get up in the morning, sit around in a little group, and start talking. And what you had to talk about was, were bad things that you did or bad things that you knew about other people in your group. And after you talked about all those things for a while, you could go and eat. Well, what they discovered is that the people began to not trust each other and they began to isolate. And a number of things happen in wartime. One, nobody escapes by themselves. You have to have the will to escape, and you have to have other help. Who's watching for the guards when you're digging tunnels and all that? Guess what? That didn't happen much in the Korean War because they got them all saying these awful things about each other. Well, I can tell you when I was in the third grade and I stole candy, and this is when I did this and I did this, and they wouldn't let them affirm each other in any kind of way, so they isolated. They strategically isolated these people, and they had almost no reason to have very many guards because these people didn't trust each other. The other thing that they found is that when they died, and the psychiatrist that was trying to put some kind of diagnosis on it gave up and came up with a very strong clinical term he called give-up-itis. The guys would go over in the corner, pull a blanket over their head, and sometime between 24 and 48 hours they would die. They just died at higher rates than they've ever died in any war. The same kind of exact same kind of thing that we had back in the 20s and earlier with babies, the marasmus syndrome, where babies, you know, we made big moves against orphanages, large orphanages, to group homes because babies that weren't held and touched and cuddled, they died. So I'm making this as a point that I don't know what your quotient is, but you and I apparently have a need, and I mean it in a very serious kind of way, a need to be touched emotionally and physically. And if you aren't getting enough emotional and physical touch, you, if you don't die, you'll get pretty squirrely. Now, I don't know what your quotient is of how much you need to be touched emotionally and physically. And I don't have time to get into this today, but I really also think I can show you pretty conclusively that that doesn't have to be sex. Don't need sex. I know that's a surprise to a lot of people, but you won't die. You will die if you don't get physically and emotionally touched. You won't die if you don't get sex. It's just, it's amazing. I know you can't believe that, but it's really true. But it, the psychopathology that develops when you are not connected physically and emotionally to somebody or somebody's, the pathology that develops is amazing. I mean, you know, it's people start walking around like this. I mean, it's just all kind. No, I don't know what happens to you. I don't know how you handle it, but you really do get pretty squirrely around that. What I want to have us do is take a look at this model, and I'd like us to play a little bit with how much, assuming you buy that construct, how much do you need? Because that gets to be real tricky, particularly if you have a partner and you're trying to figure how much of this you need and they're trying to figure how much of this they need, and I'm just working on the assumption that you can pretty well figure if you don't, if you're finding yourself depressed, anxious, angry, various kinds, and you can't figure for the life of you what's going on, quite often if you will take a look at your touch, emotional and physical quotient, it may vary at times in your life, but there is a pretty strong piece there. Okay, I want to shift over to this. I am talking or want to have you work on tonight how you communicate in an intimate kind of way what's going on inside of you to someone. And then the next time we get together, we're going to talk about how do you listen to someone. You know, two different things. You can't do them both at one time. But how do you let someone else know this is what's going on inside of me? Because that emotional and physical touch is a two-piece thing. You know, it's me giving, letting you know what's going on inside of me, as well as me hearing from you and learning those particular skills. So what I am proposing here is this wheel, an awareness wheel, or information wheel, or a thoughts and feelings wheel. I've called it a lot of different things. But I would like you to draw something like this on that piece of paper of yours, where you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 segments that you can write some things in. And I'm going to step you through it, the things that I'd like to have you write in them. I don't care if you, I mean, make your circle better than mine. I'm sure some of you are much better circle builders than I am, but. Now, the task tonight is going to be how to let somebody else know what's going on inside of me. Let's see. Any more papers still floating around? Yes, there's a little bit left. And maybe a pencil? Here we go. Might even be both in there. Okay. All right, so the task I'm looking at now is how do I let you know specifically what I'm going through. And I'm going to take it through some steps. I'll tell you why I'm going to take it through some steps. Both in being a good listener to where my partner is and being a good teller of what's going on inside of me, I still think there are some specifics that we need to look at. One of the specifics that we need to look at is my understanding that to be a good listener or a good teller, tonight we're talking about being a good teller, it's a skill. It really is a skill, and there are some specific steps to it, and you don't develop a skill if you don't practice. You don't just go to some place for an hour or go buy a I really want to work as therapists out of business. You don't go to a therapist for 6 months and really know how to do this well. It takes a long time. And many of us are willing to go to an art class or willing to take golf lessons. And I don't know if any of you ever hit golf lessons, but you know, when I try to think of all the things I got to think of to hit that squirrely little ball right, I mean, I got to get my hips through and I got to hold my arm straight. And there's so many things I've got to do. It takes a lot of practice. And gee, I even think that how to let you know what's going on inside of me might even be more important than how well I hit the golf ball. But I often don't practice. So what I really suggest, and I've said this in each one of my presentations this week, although I'm doing it on different pieces, take what I'm going to run through with you here tonight, and I would suggest that with somebody, agree to get together once a week, and agree to do it for 6 months, agree to do it for a year. Work as therapists out of business. You don't need us if you're willing to do that. You really don't. That's one thing. We were talking earlier before I came down here, and this is in reference to your comment, Bree, about I think it's important to realize that there's got to be a fairly close proportion of commitment on both parts before we're willing to do this risky stuff. You know, if I want to talk at a level 10, you know, where I'm just really spilling everything out, and you're willing to listen at a level 1, I'm not going to go very far. I don't know about you, but when I'm telling you where my heart is, I'm watching you and I'm listening to what you say. And if I shoot a couple of little shots out there and you don't respond somewhat reasonably, I'm not going to tell you much more. Now, I don't think we all have to be at exactly the same level, but maybe if I'm going to be at a 7, you better be at least a 4. Work with me, okay? But work with me a little bit and be sensitive to where I am if I'm going to tell you where my heart is. Another thing, it's real important for both to understand when we do this kind of thing that the natural differences in how we operate and how we share and how we listen have to be taken into consideration too. I've been doing some stuff with the Myers-Briggs, and just with the Myers-Briggs, just to talk about the difference between an introvert and an extrovert in the Myers-Briggs term is something really to take into consideration. You know, we run all the way from, you know, in Fiddler on the Roof, where Tevye is singing and she's saying to him, "Do you love me?" And he says, "Do I love you? I told you when we get married I love you. I've been with you for 25. You want me to tell it to you again?" You know, I mean, I'm here. I give you the money. I give you the food. Of course I love you. What do you mean, do you love me? And he may be, or he may not be, a classic introvert. But in the stuff we've been doing with the Myers-Briggs, it's important to realize that some folks, in the Myers-Briggs sense of introverts and extroverts, introverts think and talk, and extroverts talk and think. So let's remember that. You know, I'm an extrovert, and I'm talking all the time while I'm thinking all the time, and they kind of intersperse. And if you're listening to an extrovert, if an extrovert's talking, if an extrovert's not talking, they're not thinking. You know, us extroverts talk in paragraphs. We don't talk in sentences. Whereas the introverts tend to think, get a feedback, get a clue, get a sign, think about it, work it through, go away for a day or for an hour, come back and say, "Yeah." So I think the introverts of the world, I don't score any introvert points on that test. You'd never guess that, would you? I mean, I'm out there. But it's important for me to recognize that lots of folks aren't that way. But it's also important for the introverts to recognize that this kind of sharing stuff, that's important too. And your partner hasn't a clue how you got the answer. It's like doing a math problem and saying 3,246.97. How'd you get that? Why would you care how I got it? There's the answer. How would you care how I felt all along the way? So both have to pay a little bit of attention. Honor the fact that extroverts do talk to think. I make a little statement that if you don't know what an extrovert is thinking and feeling, then you haven't been listening. Because that lets you know. On the other hand, if you don't know what an introvert is thinking and feeling, you haven't asked. Remember, introverts aren't going to think to tell you. That's not natural. So, anyway, we have to be working with that, but let's say that we worked with that, and now I want to go through this just a little bit. I'm going to ask you to think of an issue, and I'm going to ask you to think of an issue that you're willing to talk through a little bit with somebody here. If it's somebody that you're partnered up with, that's really comfortable. Somebody they're not your partner, but you sort of know them, that's fine. And if it's and if you can't fit that category at all, take a risk and just talk with somebody you haven't a clue who they are. But we'll fake it a little bit. So would you, before we go any farther, connect up with one other person for a minute? I'd like everybody to be partnered in some way. So we're one-to-one. It can go two and one if we have to, but I'd like you to be as partnered up as you can be. You think you're going to sit over there all by yourself, then? Okay. How are we doing? Don't have a partner. Anybody else that's uneven in number right here? Okay, here's two. Would you two sit together? One of you could. There's two chairs right over there. Great. All righty. Now, because some of you know each other quite well, and because some of you don't at all, I would like you to do one of two things. Either share an issue that I give you, I'm going to give you one in just a second, either share an issue that I give you or share an issue that's pretty personal to you, something that really you believe in, you have some feelings about, it's important to you, or role play it. In other words, fake it. And we're never going to ask whether you just made the whole darn thing up. I don't care. But make it sound like it's got some juice to it. You know, like it's something that's really, really pretty important to you. So, did that make sense?
Sure.
All right, take 2 minutes and get acquainted a little bit with this person. Talk with them in case you don't know. Okay, that's enough. That's friendly enough. We don't need to get too friendly here. That's enough. We don't have a lot of time. All right, I want to work you through this step because I want you to take it away with you. Remember that it, at least as far as I'm concerned right now, it's more important to learn the strategy than it is to get this all the way worked through. And hopefully you'll go and practice this sometime. Remember I said one of three things. I'm going to give you an issue that you can take to discuss, or I want you to take an issue that's pretty personal to you, and the two of you would have to agree to talk about that issue, or we're going to have you make up an issue. And like I say, something that sounds profound. We've had some workshop stuff here on violence with kids and TV, or issues on abortion. Now the issue that I'm going to give you is, how much of that physical and emotional touch do I need? That's the issue I'm going to give you. How much do I need? That's going to be the issue that I'm going to give you, just to talk that through. And my guess is that if it's a pretty important issue, you don't really know too well, and so I'm going to have you go through it here. When I teach counseling classes in college, it's just, you know, this one little strategy, if you really want to learn how to tell your heart or listen to people, if you can just run right around this circle, where if you learn to say, this is what I see, this is how I feel, this is what I think, this is what I want, and this is what I'm going to do about it, you get the whole counseling course done. If you can just really incorporate those five things really well. But what I'd like you to do is right now on your little piece of paper, and this gets a little tricky, I would like one of you to be the person who's going to tell. And I'd like the other person to listen to them as they talk just a little bit, and then write down what you think they would say. Don't look at their piece of paper. That's all. It's going to be a lot easier if you really have a partner. Like, for instance, for starters, I know it's a little confusing, but maybe this will help. My issue is, let's say, coming in here tonight. You know, we've got a group get together. So into this column, I would put things down that I see or I hear or I feel, not emotionally, strictly behavior. Like I hear the bell ringing, I see people coming in, I saw my pile of papers disappear because they didn't have enough, I saw the pencil pile disappear, I saw you in early, Mr. Wolf, over here. I saw you sitting there early. See, all those things I saw with my eyes or I felt, they're all sense data. They're all behaviors. So would you take whatever your issue is, decide it right now real quick, the one that you're going to talk about, personal, and then write some things in your column, but don't show it to the other person, that are strictly sense data. I'm still getting lots of looks, so I'm not making sense yet. Yes.
Question. Okay, now are we filling in
just this column right here?
The sense column.
Everybody's doing it.
With our own issue.
With your, but you got to have the same issue.
Give us your issue.
Okay, I'll give you my issue. My issue is looking at the concept that Bill shared with us, that I really need emotional and physical touch. And I'm probably going to die if I don't get it. If I don't die, I'm going to get crazy. How much of that do I need? How much emotional and physical touch? Do I need to be touched every day? Do I need to be hugged 12 times? Do I need to be talked to sensitively? How much of that stuff do I need? Particularly, well, from anybody.
So Bill, in that first one, under sense, you want us to fill in. I hear Bill telling me I'm
That's right.
in touch.
You got it.
And I look around and I see everybody else puzzled. How much touch do I need?
Oh, that's wonderful.
And much of the rest of it, then anything else really goes around to one of the next ones.
Sure, or you can say, and when I hear Bill say that, just stay with that. That's good.
It's got to answer one of the five senses.
It's got to answer one of the five senses.
I touch, taste, or smell.
Uh-huh.
Which are less.
Touch, taste. And let's forget, because we don't know each other now, everybody just fill it in on your own. I'm just trying to get behaviors. That's very nice. Thank you. I hear Bill saying, this is the issue. I see people writing with the paper, writing with their pencils. I hear people asking questions. I hear a paraphrase. I'm just trying to get you into writing behaviors about what's going on with this exercise.
Because much of the rest of it may come under one of the other wheels.
The rest of it may come into something else. You're not even talking about the rest of it. Right now, I see, I hear. I feel my piece of paper on my knee. I feel the pencil in my fingers. You're still puzzled.
Well, because what I would do is say, I see, or I feel, or give myself some sensei data around what happens to my behavior when I get intimate contact versus what I see or observe in my behavior when I don't.
And that's great. I'm just not going to go that far. Okay. She helped me out wonderfully. I just find people don't do work that way. That's just not been my experience. And I know that's what they're doing. I don't. Yeah, I thought for today, if I were to continue to get through all that, so I'm sure so you're right. That's what we're teaching. They teach it the other way in our reversal. Thank you. Okay, I think I have, you know, it's really wonderful in a communications workshop to miscommunicate, but, you know, you win some and you lose some. I'm really trying to be more simple here than what you are. I'm just trying to press you into dealing with what you see, what you hear, what you physically feel. And all you can deal with right now is, I see, I hear, I feel, I hear Bill talking to me, I feel my pencil, I see, I look around, I see people. Yeah, that's really all you can deal with. So,
but that doesn't seem to be really relating to the subject
it is
you gave us or the subject that we're using.
It is
not.
Just stay right here. Just stay right here. Yes?
It's not so much a vision or desire, but it's what's happening.
Exactly. It's not a vision, it's not a thought, it's not a feeling, it's not an anything. Right. Okay. Now, let's hold it right there, because that's all I want to do with that one. Just because of time, I want to move on a little bit. Whatever issue the two of you are talking about, whatever it is, if you take my issue, that's fine. If you don't take that issue, take some kind of an issue. But I want you to then jot in your little column, I feel. Now, this is an emotional thing that I feel. And the reason I want to do this, and as we go around, all I'm trying to do is get you to practice that when something is coming up, it's triggered generally by something I see externally. I see my partner walking in the door with a scowl on their face. I see them gripping their hand tightly. You see, those are triggers. And those triggers kick me into some kind of thought or feeling. Okay, in this case, all I'm trying to do is help you have a little better tool to tell about how you're feeling about anything. So what I'm asking you to do now and what you're thinking is to move it into what feelings you might have about whatever your topic is. Don't explain them. And generally, feelings are one or two words, and generally you can locate feelings in your body if you pay attention. So if you say things like, I feel really upset. No. I feel really angry that you are about to do this. What I'm saying is one or two words, sad, happy, interested, frightened. Yeah.
Where do things like, I have a headache, I feel uncomfortable in this chair go?
Sure, put them right here.
Did they go on the
Sure, absolutely, absolutely. Okay, put down a feeling. Or put down two or three feelings. Let me suggest something to you that sometimes is confusing to folks. If I come home from work, I may be lonely and really want to be with my partner. I may also be fed up with being around people and want to be completely by myself. They seem contradictory, don't they? But they can sure be both. So you can have what seem like contradictory feelings. So whatever your issue is right now, put down any kind of feeling that you have, and it may even be a contradictory feeling. Short term, words, whatever. I'm hearing frustrated, I'm hearing, yeah, that's the stuff that goes there. Perfect. Okay, I want to move you on. I want you to analyze those feelings a little bit. Like, why do you think you have those feelings? And that's where you put your thoughts in. If I feel frustrated, you know, the reason I feel frustrated is because I don't get hugged enough. The reason I feel empty and unconnected is, and put your thoughts in there. So about whatever it is, you see some things that moves you to having some feelings, and then you move into some thoughts about those feelings. And that's where you can't write it all out, but write you a few triggers about that. Okay, just because of time, and I know I'm pushing you, but in whatever the interaction is, that, you know, you're with somebody else, you're with a partner, or you're with a pretend partner for now, but maybe you'd like to learn how to do it. What is it that you want in this interaction? If I share this with you, what is it that I want? I want to let you know where I am. I want you to like me. I want something. What is it that I want? So what you've done is you've gotten something that's triggered you into a certain direction. And you had some feelings that came up about it. Even though they may have been contradictory, you had a number of different feelings. And then you had some thoughts about, why do I feel that way? And now I want you to move it around to, what do you want? What would you like to have happen if you are to share your heart, tell somebody something? And let me just mention two things now, and I know I'm pushing you fast here, but here's what I think happens with most situations. I believe that most of us, when we really want to communicate with somebody else, we get triggered by something, which comes in the behavior stuff. I see something or I hear something, okay? in my sense, I get triggered. And my belief is that what many of us do is we go straight from here to here. And we don't even look at how we feel or what we think. The two problems we run into in our communication process there, I believe, are we run into not separating what I think and what I feel. You know, what I feel is just what I feel. It has a life of its own. It's okay to feel, however. And if I can identify what my thoughts are about how I feel, boy, that gives me a lot more information. So, and I can do something with, I think a lot of us just jump from here straight to here. And now what I'd like you to do is take the thing, now that you've just quickly gone through this, you had some kind of a trigger, you had a feeling, you had a thought, you move it over to what you want, and then what can you do about that? What action step can you take? I will tell you. I will choose not to tell you. Or what action step can you, or I'll make an appointment, or I'll go to a therapist, or I'll do something. But what action step could you take? Now, here's what I'd like to have you do. For just, you've only got 3 or 4 minutes. I would like to have one of you agree to run around that wheel and tell that to the other person. One half of you. Would you do that? Just run through your wheel and say about this issue. Here's what I think. Here's what I feel. Here's what I want. Okay, let me stop you. Would you what happened when you did that? What was that like? Did you learn? What did you learn in that? What does that do for you?
Provides a framework in which to have a civilized discussion.
Okay. A framework to have a civilized discussion. Okay?
Good. Puts, I think, both people in the same ballpark, in the same basket, using this method.
Okay.
Know what we're talking about back and forth. So if you're not talking up here and down here, you're talking
okay.
About
okay. Okay. Yeah.
It causes you to your own processes about what's going on.
So it causes me to own my own stuff. I've got to look at my own stuff as I work through this. Yeah.
And then you have a course of action too. If you want to know what to do.
Okay.
Because you understand why you need to do it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
For me, it pointed up the differences in what we were thinking and feeling and et cetera. And it made me understand what he was actually feeling and not just what I thought he was feeling or thinking.
Mm-hmm.
We picked a different subject.
Good. Yeah. Any other thoughts that you had about that? It's awfully quick.
Well, I thought the idea of having contradictory, that it was all right to find yourself contradictory, when I could accept that I had contradictory, then I could move on. Clear thinking about it.
Mm-hmm. That I could have contradictory feelings about something.
Right. Want more, yet want more space.
Sure. Yeah, I want to be close. And I don't want to be close. Sure. Yes.
It helps both you and your partner understand what's going on. If you understand what you're thinking about, and also to relate to them where you're coming from.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It also helps if we discover that we're really quite different from what the other person is. So we can go back to the senses. What was the information that I heard or that I saw, touched, taste, mm-hmm. smell, the other three senses as well. And I might jump then to think, what did I really think about that? How did I interpret it? That may then revise my feelings, which sure. may then revise my wants and my intentions, which may then give me some other
all kinds of spin-offs.
What I want to do, so that we can reframe, we can revise, we can we can go back to the senses and really document what really did happen, rather than just get caught up in our thoughts, which then affect our feelings.
Now, my suggestion with this kind of thing is, I don't know how you get good at this if you don't do this. And I'm making the same pitch all the time. I told some of the other day that for years, my wife and I on Tuesday night hopped in the conversation pit. The kids' dinner would be done. They'd be off doing something. And from 7:19 until 8 o'clock, we did issues. And I don't know why 7:19. It was weird, but that was the time we picked. But we would do an issue. And we would do it from 7:19 until 8 o'clock every Tuesday night. We did that for years. Because there's always some issue. It can be a very profound one, like, should we adopt a child to one like, what, are we going to really go see Jurassic Park or not? You know, but it's an issue, and it can still run. This is what I hear, see, this is how I feel, this is what I think. And it's amazing if you really put a little energy into, and some of you had a little taste of that here, if you put a little energy into getting what the other person feels about something and thinks about something, it's like, whoa, oh, that's what, oh, gee, you know, and it just really puts it in a different perspective. Any other comments? Well, I would suggest the same thing I've been suggesting each time. Would you commit to, because we've been so rushed here, to with somebody go and do this? Take one of these little circles, put an issue in the middle, and work it through with somebody. You write yours down, let them write theirs down. Now, a fun thing to do if you're a couple, or a fun thing to do with the partner, I think this is really a fun thing to do. Get a nice, juicy topic. It's what I started to try to do in the beginning, but it was really not working, and so thank goodness I got off of that kick and let you guys do what was really beginning to work. And that is, you suggest a topic, you write down the stuff that you think, feel, see, and have them write down what they think you're going to put down. And after you get through it, look and see what the it's amazing sometimes. You thought I was going to say what? So you can have some fun with this. Well, let's go. It's time to go to Vespers. Thank you very much. Here's your watch.
Thank you.